Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
I'm Casey.
And I'm excited.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? This is The Element Podcast.
Everybody.
Brought to you by First Light Gear. Today, we have got the Core 5 core is on the podcast.
Dang, Brian.
Let me give you all a little info.
His feelings are hurt.
Today, we are about to throw it down and talk about the most exciting critter there is to hunt in the continental U.S. and possibly the world, the Axis deer. And I'm not being facetious. It's bad to the bone. But first, I got to let y'all in a little something. What we do on the podcast is we have four headphones. Well, that doesn't work out very good for the Core 5. So our friend Michael somehow got the low seat on the totem pole.
It's almost like the young one always gets the low seat.
That's it. That's it. And he's talking on a regular microphone. It's kind of weird. So we're going to ask him to not talk very much.
Yeah, that's probably good anyway.
So, Casey Smith.
Excited.
Tyler Jones.
Michael Stoll.
Greg Latham.
Eric Gentry.
They're all here. Everybody is present. Everyone who is here was on an Axis hunt this past week. And we hunted hogs too, but there wasn't much to talk about there. Mm-hmm. So we're going right into the actual fun stuff. And then our friend Giannis Patelis came down from the North Country down to the Low Country down here. We're not actually in the Low Country. The Low Country is a different part of the country, but I like to joke about that.
Listen, Giannis was a little angry that you made fun of me about my accent.
I told you not talk so much.
Well, I'm sorry. I had to let the people know that Giannis was sticking up for me.
Well, good for him. It didn't do you a lot of good. You know,
we need to be doing video podcasts.
No, I want to get excited about Axis, but I want to get excited about Giannis for a second. Because Giannis is a tall, tall fella.
Long tongue.
In fact, one time I stood on a curb and was as tall as Giannis. I kind of liked it. But I noticed we went to our local Mexican food place, our local taquera, and we all sat down at the table. And when Giannis and I sat down, our eyes were level.
So dude, you feel good.
We got the same size torso. he just got long legs.
Is your torso long or is his torso short?
I think his is short for his overall body size.
Gotcha.
I think I'm like average leg and torso length. But I don't really know for sure. Pretty average guy overall. What about you? What is your torso? Do you have a long torso or long legs?
I don't know. I think I'm just fairly normal.
Proportional?
I mean, somehow we wear the same pants, though.
No, mine are shorter.
Oh.
Well, sometimes sizing gets a little weird. And sometimes if you get one size are just a little too short. Sometimes you get one the other size a little too long. You just got to find the right fit for you, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Greg, we're getting excited about Giannis right now. You hunted with Giannis all week.
Yeah.
Tell me about hunting with Giannis.
I mean, it's fun hunting with Giannis, but the style of hunting we were doing wasn't maybe the most exciting, but maybe the most rewarding. I don't know.
Yeah? In what sense was it rewarding?
We got some shots.
That's good. Okay, yeah. So
that deer that weren't looking at him.
Must be nice. I know what axis eyeballs look like real good.
For sure. Have you ever seen a chameleon?
They do a weird thing with their eyes.
Yeah, chameleon eyes.
Some of that footage is creepy to watch. Like, they're looking out of the side, like their side eye at you, and it's like, I don't know. I've never seen an animal do that type of thing.
I think it was both of those times we saw them do that, they were being ruddy. The axis rut, okay, they do a thing kind of like elk, which I think is what makes them really, really cool, okay? Like, they have antlers kind of like elk. They're big for their body size like an elk is, and they are super vocal, like way more vocal than a whitetail, at least as far as volume goes. Like, we would be hunting, especially in the morning this time of year, they would be doing what you would call a roar or a scream, some people call it. The guys we're hunting with, they call it a scream, I think, right?
Yeah.
But I've always called it a roar.
I call it a bugle several times.
I mean, you know, it's hard to not call them bulls and cows.
I called them bulls almost the whole time. And yeah. I was like, I told Bryce, I was like, I'm just going to call them bulls, just so you know. If you haven't figured it out, that's what they are to me.
Yeah. They're neat because they seem like elk a lot. Their herd dynamics are like that, and they do like a rut thing where there's like a buck with a harem, and that usually happens from like May until August. But axis are unique because they don't come from here, right? They come from India and maybe like some of the close countries. I don't know what their range is exactly.
Would you call them Indians?
Maybe. I mean, Indian Americans probably, since all these were born here. But they... they still have some rut stuff going on this time of year. It's weird because India, subtropical climate and tropical climate, depending on where you are in the country, or Arctic climate, on the north end. But anyway, it doesn't have four seasons like it does here where they live in Texas. So it kind of throws their just natural cycles out of whack. So at any point in time throughout the year, you have hardhorn buck, you have shed bucks, you have velvet bucks that are half grown out, and you have velvet bucks that are about to shed their velvet. So there's always a buck roaring somewhere in Texas, which is pretty cool. Now, we saw some of that top action, and that what Michael's referring to with those eyeballs is like when they get all like, you know, going, as we might say, like a rutty.
In the mood.
They'll be like doing elk stuff around, you know, their does or cows, as Tyler may call them. And
no, they were does.
Is that you didn't have a problem with the does? See, I was the opposite. I could call them bucks, but I wanted to call those females cows.
Well, it changed from time to time during it.
Well, you know.
You got to
ebb and flow, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to adapt a little bit.
That's right. Adapt, improvise, overcome, right?
That's it.
That's right. So they like do this like thing where they act like they're looking forward.
What? I looked at Michael and said, is that the Marines? He goes, ooh, or whatever they do.
Peek.
Sorry, guys. Headphone warning.
Yeah. Steven will be happy.
Yeah, he will. Yes. Come on.
That's good.
Talking about Ranella?
No, not him. He's not happy. The bucks, I think they're posturing. I think they're doing a thing where they're showing off their antlers. Black buck do this, I know, where they throw their heads back and they look at the side of their eye, like cock their eye over real hard and look at the doe, but their heads are facing forward.
It creeps me out bad.
I want to just lay one in there. That's what I want to do when I see that. It makes me just mad.
Want to vomit.
Yeah, it makes me get real, real excited. So, Greg, we started with you.
Yep.
And Giannis. Y'all hunted what tactic?
We did 2 all-day sits at a water hole.
Midwest style.
So
Giannis did like 10 during deer season, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Something. I don't remember.
He did like, I think he did like 10 all-day sits in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think his entire rut was all-day sits.
I don't, I cannot. I can't do one. I can't do one.
Man. That was the first time I've ever done an all-day sit
really?
For anything.
Ever?
Yeah.
Really?
I was KC wondering. Thought you would like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the worst thing, but it gets kind of boring.
Do you have self-service?
Well, that blackout happened the first day.
You're an AT&T guy.
Yeah, I didn't have service till like 1 o'clock. So.
What'd you do?
I just ate all my snacks.
Yeah?
Dude, I'm telling you, when you're bored, snack eating isn't like the thing. You eat slower and you're like, instead of just ripping a package open, you're like, oh, I'm just going to tear this perfect corner right here, you know?
You ever do that thing guys talk about where they're like, I'm just going to eat a corner of my sandwich. And then you start, and then you're like, I'm just going to eat half of it. And then by the time you're done, it's all gone. I don't
just
really
eat the
do
whole
that
sandwich.
I just filmed this one mesquite tree for like the 80th time and just kept doing B-roll shots.
Baby. How many birds did y'all log? How many species of birds?
Giannis was pulling up an app that was, you know, going through the sounds of birds, and any given time it'd be like 5 different birds.
There's a lot of cool bird sounds on that. Yeah. On that
I saw some black-throated sparrows, which are one of my favorites to see. And then I think we saw a Pyroluxia sitting at.
I totally know what that
the,
is.
So imagine a cardinal, but a Mexican cardinal.
Oh.
I think that's what they might have been called for a long time. And so they look like a cardinal, but their crest is longer. But even the males look like females. They have like a little bit more mottled.
They're getting with
color.
The times, aren't they?
Hey, they. They've been there, you know what I'm saying? But they
Michael,
have like an oranger beak.
Michael.
Yes, sir.
Are you going to grow that facial hair out during turkey season?
Turkey beard or whatever?
Yeah. What's your plan thing? For your hair during turkey season? All your hairs?
We're going to leave it.
All of it?
You're going to look like a predator out there.
And
they're
so you're not going to cut until after turkey season?
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right, sorry to cut in the axis talk, but.
Unless you really want to mullet.
I just knew Michael was showing off his mustache right then and whatever
Michael's
he was doing.
Mustache. So. Mike in the middle.
He's going to be probably gone for like 45 days during turkey season.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
Y'all, if you're interested in turkey hunting, follow along because Michael's going to be just Mr. Vlogmaster.
Man.
That's the plan.
Vlogmaster general.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Tyler.
Yeah.
What was your intention in going axis hunting this week?
It's a tough question. I mean, it's kind of vague, but...
Let me do something different to you. Tyler, what was your intention in going to axis hunting this past week? What do you think your most exciting experience was? How do you feel like your setup for axis hunting worked? And do you feel like you had the right camo on?
My goal, if that's what you're asking with intention.
I am being Pat McAfee and you are being Saban. So you just hear what I say and say what you want.
I would love to be Saban. Let me just put that biscuit in my mouth. I mean, if you mean goal by intention, because my intention and goal might be different things, but I'm thinking goal. It was to kill an axis deer,
mm-hmm.
a buck, big buck.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a plan?
Like on how to kill one? Shoot it behind the shoulder. That's about it. But I think that, you know, they're bow hunting axis is difficult. Bow hunting anything is pretty difficult. Bow hunting axis deer is also really difficult because you talked about it, but they're gregarious. They're a herd animal, and they like each other. And this time of year,
they like each other. I like it.
I mean, you know, in other words, I don't want to step on your feet too much, but you might have called about 6,000 axis in.
We can talk about that in a little bit. Yeah.
So they like each other, I think. But that herd nature can make it really difficult to get into the mix and get them killed unless you're doing stand hunting. But they're super, like kind of antsy, almost high strung a little bit. I don't want to make these things out to be any more difficult than a white-tailed deer, because I don't think that that's it. I think they're just different than a white-tailed deer.
Well, you also have a lot more experience hunting white-tailed deer.
Yeah.
And they are not white-tailed deer.
No.
They behave a lot different than a white-tailed
deer. For sure. Deer. Yeah, and I like it a lot. But because they're kind of antsy, it makes stand hunting tough too, because they're probably a lot like whitetail bucks, especially where they don't like a lot of stuff going on in the area. So stand hunting them, if there's been somebody running a camera in there recently or putting batteries or throwing corn out or whatever might have been in that area or building a stand even, I think you run into a deal where like they learn quick that they don't want to be in that area, at least for the next few days or whatever.
They only have right now kind of two motivating factors. That's food and water. There's not a ton of rut going on.
Yeah.
So, like, they can get that at many times of the day, you know, and they don't have any, like, one of the big issues that people like to present about axis deer is that they are non-native, so, and they, on a animal-to-animal basis, can out-compete a white-tailed deer for resources if resources are limited.
I think resources, if they can, I think that that would be because of body weight size more than anything.
Yeah, it's very possible.
But if they were in deer country that was north, I don't think they would do the same
thing.
Might
be the case.
Yeah.
But resources in one of the most lush areas of Texas are not hardly ever limited.
Yeah. So, especially on the place we hunted, which is a huge, huge place that had tons of water on it.
Low fence place too, which is really neat. Because a lot of times people think about exotics and high fences, and, you know, for a good reason, because a lot of people like to keep their valuable animals within a restricted area. But axis have naturalized in this part of the state and have been that way since the late 50s, I think, right?
32. I saw a lot of people saying, a lot of different articles saying 32 was the first year axis came over.
That's when the YO brought axis over.
32. I don't know if it was a YO thing or not. I didn't see that for sure.
So, they have been here for a while, almost 100 years now. Wild, right? But they roam free out in that country. It's just free as the wind blows, right? And since there's an over adequate amount of resources, they can just say, I'm going to drink that water later, which is weird. We saw them do that. Like, you would think that, like, a deer that is, like, thirsty enough to go to a water source is like, I have to drink water. But no, we saw them come in to food and water a couple times and just be like, it's a little weird, I'm just leaving.
And they're looking for something to mess the whole deal up.
Absolutely.
Like, first night, we were sitting in these live oaks, me and Eric, and bulletproof setup. Wind was great. Like, wind was blowing hard. I feel like I could have done a jumping jack and got away with it probably. A group of 10 does comes in right before dark and never ended up eating. But I don't think they left either. So just hung out in the brush 50 yards from the feeder. And I think I think they learn that those feeders are at least have some man-made goings on happening in some way, because people come in and feed or hunt there or whatever it might be. And I think that makes them really cautious around those places. The one thing that I noticed also, I think, and I hunted with a guy named Bryce, and you hunted with a guy named Austin. So you'll hear us talk about them periodically.
They're our friends. They have an outfit down there called TO Outfitters. we'd be remiss to not mention them, and they do a great job.
Top notch. They don't really do bow hunting stuff too much, but thankfully they allowed us to do some bow hunting.
If you want to kill a big axis with a gun, they are the people to do it.
Yeah. So anyway, Bryce was telling me, you know, we were talking about all kinds of different stuff, and I learned a ton on this trip from him. But one thing I noticed is that I thought that in a big herd, that the axis, like, were, it's almost like they let their guard down because they're relying on the other 40 axis or whatever to see the problem, you know, that's coming in on them, whatever, stalking them. So they let their guard down a little bit, and they get real comfortable. And there's also this thing where, like, movement can be, like, you know, if they were to see you moving 40 yards away, they might just kind of almost let it go, because it's like, oh, well, things are moving all over the place because they have this pace. I noticed this. We did have one of those 10 axes come in and feed for, you know, 10 minutes while we were there at the end of shooting light or end of dark. It's, there's no really end of shooting light for axes. But at the end, in the dark, it fed around with these whitetails, and it moved like twice as fast feeding as the whitetails did.
They
and
do almost like what pigs do.
Yeah, yeah.
They just zig and zag. One little bite,
moving fast, you know. Mm-hmm. And so
why do you think that is?
I think it is because they have natural, from where they're from originally, there's this instinctual thing that they have a huge predator, being in a Bengal tiger, that, like, if they move around a lot, A, they have spots, which are supposed to be, like, kind of disorienting for the predator. So that spots within different cover and stuff might disorient the predator. Also, a tiger is supposedly never attacks something unless it can see that it's the back of its head. Like, in other words, it attacks from behind, sneak attack, and if it sees eyes, it won't attack. And so that's like why some of the natives in that country historically have worn masks on the back of their heads when they're working and stuff.
We're looking at a Nilgai on your wall. We can't see this part of him, but if you look at a Nilgai from behind, the back of his ears have one white spot on each ear that is pretty much an eye spot.
Yeah, it looks like eye.
Yeah, it's kind of
they're from India
thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the axes, I think, move around a lot to disorient the predator, and also so that, like, this is all probably instinctual, right? But like the ones that move around a lot may not get eaten as much because their head is facing away, or only facing away from that tiger a short amount of time, I guess. So it makes them difficult. And also, like, it makes them, they're antsy around feeders, like, and they jump strings real bad in those situations, I think, a lot. But, like, if you're stalking them in that big herd, you can get away with a few things sometimes. The problem with the country we're stalking them in is there's lots of cedars, and they're like, I don't know if this is a goat browse line or what, but they're, like, thin underneath. Mm-hmm. So if you were to see, you can't see them. Those axes at 80 yards, but they can see your feet coming through. Mm-hmm. So that was like a big challenge in the stalking situations. Mm-hmm. And I did a little bit, and you did of we hung in saddles, we were in some tripods, and listen, we were ground blinds.
The saddle thing would work.
Oh, for sure.
So this was a learning experience. If y'all are listeners of The Element or watch our YouTube channel, which if you listen and don't watch, man, you're missing out. But anyways, you know that we've hunted axes a few times. This is the third time I've had a weapon in my hand around axes. I've spent a lot of time around them. But I learned more on this trip than I ever have. And it's a principle that we talk about with whitetail a whole lot. Like, if you hunt East Texas, kind of where we're from, especially if you don't hunt deer feeders, like you hunt public land, you may only encounter three deer all year long. You don't get to learn a whole lot from three deer. On this trip, there was such a heavy population of axes that you were at least around them the whole time. You may not see them, but you can hear them. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a day that went by I didn't see an axis. And so between that, being on a large property, understanding herd dynamics and seeing sign, like, I learned so much more about, like, what they are doing on a daily basis and how they are interacting together. And by learning all that stuff, like, I now feel like if I got 4 days to go hunt axis with a bow, I could go sit in a couple trees and a couple, they're not really pinch points, but they're like transition areas that the deer just use to get from, like, bed to feed or bed to water, which I think water's more powerful than feed is with axis, which is very neat. Our friend Tony would be real hype about that.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's especially one tree. Michael, you know which one I'm talking about.
That's a killing tree
right there. That tree right there is a bat of the bone tree.
Yeah.
I've noticed that. I feel like that I saw more axis drinking by far from water than whitetails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We never had a whitetail come to water.
Yep. Did we?
I don't think we.
We hunted closer to the house there or whatever?
Yeah.
We had a couple whitetails drink water.
Yeah.
Y'all also were over there in the Dr. Doolittle area.
The honey hole.
The honey hole where just all the game was.
Not to mention, Axis deer can drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed that. I don't remember what clip we were watching, but there's one of them that would just kept drinking and drinking.
Yeah. Funny enough, we never got to see one drink water. They just looked at it.
Yeah. I feel like overall, though, most of the deer didn't drink very much water, even though they could. Mm-hmm. Like, I was prepared. I was hunting a trough at one point, and I had pretty much a shot to the trough out of this live oak. I was hunting out of saddle. And I was prepared to shoot very quickly because I thought, like a lot of times I was seeing footage from Giannis's hunt with Greg where they would come in and they would drink and then they would just go. And it was quick. Mm-hmm. We also had a goat come in and drink a couple of times, and he was super quick about it too most times. So both times. But I think, like, that's one thing. If you're hunting the water, you know, you got to be ready to make the shot as soon as that deer is drinking water because, you know, it's either going to turn out and not give you a shot or turn out and give you a shot and then be gone.
Man, I think it's sketchy shooting one while it's drinking water.
Do you?
There, for one, is the crocodile thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, they feel like they're very, like...
What about 17 yards?
Yeah, probably you're good there. Golly, it was 17 yards?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The back of the trough was 19.
But, you know, say like in those ponds, I'd call it a pool, but pond situations that we're in, like when you set up on the edge of one, you're automatically taking at least a 30-yard shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so 30 yards is jumping distance for sure. Axis, in my opinion, are a tad jumpier than whitetails. And that head is down, and they're already feeling like they're exposed because they're – drinking water just out in the open, it's like a recipe for disaster as far as having a deer jump and stuff on you. So, like, I think that having a deer with its head up would be a much more advantageous situation. But like you're saying, 17 yards, if he does the thing, he's dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where Land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to Land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun on the trip, man. Like, I told Bryce, I'm like, man, I'm pretty much an addict at this point. Like, I got to find a way to hunt these things often.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we're working on is figuring out what they're saying to each other, mm-hmm. and how we can talk to them to our advantage.
Hey, because there's a Dr. Doolittle song that we should learn. That would be cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, like the old production, not the Eddie Murphy one, but the old Dr. Dolittle. It's like, talk to the animals or something like that.
Yeah. I remember that song. Yeah. Michael remembers it too.
Yeah, totally. He didn't even know who Eddie Murphy is.
Yes, I do. Get out of here.
What's he in?
I can't give you a movie, but.
Flubber.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Slumber?
Flubber.
Slumber. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The Nutty Professor?
Never seen it. Heard of it.
What was that other one, Eric? You know, you're the movie guy. It was like Norbit or something like
Norbit,
that.
Norbit, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Norbit.
Well.
Yeah. Anyways.
We're working on that kind of stuff. And we ended up using the Phelps Easy Sucker.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way.
Per the suggestion of Bryce.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there was definitely an effect to it. I can go into that.
Love
kind of just my last hunt there. We didn't really have a whole lot of great hunts, but we did stalk a couple of times, and I had chances to shoot.
Grunts.
I was thinking the same thing.
We had a couple of chances to shoot big bucks, though. One was on a stalk where Eric and I got we're getting in on some bucks. We're in the middle of the cedars, and they do this thing. Axis do this thing that Bryce and Austin call lining out. And
I never heard this.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, Bryce calls it lining out, and I thought it made perfect sense. So when they get ready to go somewhere, they turn from a big, you know, like interactive herd into a line of animals that follow each other down a trail.
I saw them do that.
And so as we're stalking in on these bucks, it's a big group of bucks. They're under these live oak moth, this live oak moth in the shade in the middle of the day. It's hot. We work our way into these things, me and Eric do, and Bryce is kind of hanging back. And so we're in the middle of these cedars, and I look through the gap ahead of me, and a toad comes walking out on this pace that's like a line-out pace. It's like not a pace that is like, oh, I'm just coming out and making a circle and going to go back into the live oak. It's like I'm relocating my bedding to the next live oak mod or the next cedar or whatever. And so I'm like, I range him. By the time I get a range that I trust on him, he was out in the opening, the small opening I had, 63 yards. I was like, man, I really don't want to shoot a 63-yarder, you know, right now because there's bucks in here. But if they're going to line out, I got to move up. And I feel like I can move up like 7 or 8 yards to this last cedar in the gap and then have a 55-yarder or whatever or less to shoot if they all line out. So I walk up, and about the time I'm almost there, I increased my pace, right, because I'm thinking it's fixing to happen. I got to do this before they get out of here. Well, apparently there was a deer like 25 yards, and pow, they bark.
Y'all don't have that one lined out, did you?
No. They bark, and I don't know if they were going to line out or not at that point when I thought about it. But it looked like that was what was fixing to happen to me. Is that dude just started walking and walked 30 yards before he got out of my sight.
So on that bark, they took out?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
When that one barked 25 yards, it was like, wow, you could hear him just take off in the brush. Mm-hmm. And like, crud. So we like swing way around, and we go all the way back. We work all the way back into the wind to where they were headed. Bryce had seen them walking out. He said they weren't that spooked because he started using that Phelps Easy Sucker. And then he makes this kind of like higher-pitched, shorter noise. Real quiet, and that's what the Axis does sound like. So they all calm down immediately and start lining out at that point. Well, we work way around into them. They hadn't gone 100 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, like 25 minutes later, they hadn't gone 100 yards. But we gave up on them because we were like, well, there's the trees right there. We're 80 yards from the trees we just went, you know, to or whatever. We walk around this corner and start walking up this hill, and we had given up finally of, you know, the still hunting focus thing, and there they were. Bust them out, and that was about the time that Giannis called. We at 1:30, and there was some success, which I'll let you talk about here in a second, Greg. But the next day, the next morning, we had a morning before we had to leave. We end up getting We went into a hole, and this is one thing I saw, is that you could look at this ranch, and you could see the roads, and if you could find a place that was several hundred yards inside interior of the road, there wasn't any feeders or anything around, where people aren't making noise, there's probably going to be some access there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the two evenings before, Eric and I had heard a bull calling, back in towards that hole both evenings. And we saw him the second evening, and I thought we were fixing to kill him. But he came out with, like, I'm not kidding, like 35 does. I mean, a big group. And he was the only bull we saw. So anyway, didn't kill him. Next morning, I was telling Bryce, I was like, man, this hole right here, I think they're going back and bedding in here. So let's come in from the other side into the wind and see if we can hear him. Sure enough, he's in there just bugling. And we were, like, getting excited. It was kind of quiet at first. Wind picked up. Work our way in. And, I mean, we get into the mix, and there's does all over the place. We can see him. He's running and snooting them and stuff. And so Eric and I, like, crawl another 20 yards and get on the edge of the cedar, and there's a good gap, and then an oak mod over here. And I can see him through the tree, dude, and he's just standing there looking the other way. And so we sit up on the edge, and I'm thinking he's going to come walking back through in a little bit, or something's going to happen. We'll get a chance to walk around the cedar a little more. So we sit up on my knees. All of a sudden, long story short, 8 does work into this opening out in front of me at 45 yards, 40 to 45 yards at one point. They're all standing there, and I'm like, he's going to come through these does for sure. Never did. They start getting closer, 35, and they split. And two of them go around the cedar to our right. And when they come out, they're at 15 coming closer. And one of them walks to 10 yards and just loses it whenever she – I mean, she's like zombie walking, looking at grass in front of her, and all of a sudden just like wakes up, and we're there at 10 yards. Not moving, but, you know, bumps in the woods. And she takes off.
Isn't it weird how, like, and almost all game animals have some level of just whatever the distance is for that species, they perceive you.
Yeah.
Whitetail, we had a whitetail, like, come running at us, not running from us. And when it got to about 30 yards, we were standing still in the shade, and that deer just, like, knew we were there. It was something about the way we were shaped or whatever, even in the shade on a bright sunny day, you know. Axis, I think you're right, it's a little bit less than that. A pig even might even be less than that, you know. And it's just kind of strange how, like, you just cannot get away with it, you know.
I feel like that sunny conditions are worse than cloudy conditions for that stuff. Because I feel like there's something to a very dark, filled-in shadow that they don't see in nature.
You know what I do like about sunny conditions is the about 8:30 to 11 time period, maybe 8:30 to 10 time period especially, where, say, you got like a south wind or a west wind, and you can stalk into the wind with the sun at your back. Dude, they could not see you. I mean, they could if you, like, did something stupid, but, like, you could get away with so much with the sun in their eyes. And it was nice to have enough ground to be able to, like, position yourself in those situations.
Yep. But anyway, this doe flips out, and they all kind of take off. Well, my legs are asleep from the knee down.
Dude,
so
I the same problem.
Yeah, I stand up and I turn around, and Bryce is back there, like, 30, 40 yards, and he's like, bull. And he gives me the hand signal, bull, 30 yards. And I'm like, oh, snap. You know, we got this big cedar 30? Right in front of us. Yeah.
Golly.
And he hits the call a couple times, and he said that bull went from looking around, you could see his rack looking around in there, to all of a sudden it just went down, like, almost like feeding again or just relaxed. And so we finally are able, he's like, all right, come here, you know, after a couple minutes. We walk over to him. He's like, they lined out and just walked real slow that way. And so we made a loop real fast. I was like, because we're running out of time. We're going to leave at like 11 or something like that, you know. So we loop around and I walk around the cedar and I see them. They're lined out on this trail. I can only see a small gap, and I see one doe. So I try to, like, square up, because I got to turn a 180 to square up to get a shot. And as soon as I do, I step on a cactus, and it's a dead cactus, which
those
is one of the loudest things out there. And she looks, and I'm like, don't move. So she kind of gets nervous. She kind of runs off, jogs off or whatever. And so I range where she was at, and the plant behind her was 63. And I was like, oh, man, it's pretty long. But I was like, she's probably at 60. So I crank it to 60. And another doe comes through. I clip on, and I see antlers coming through the cedars, and I told Bryce, I said, call. And he called twice, and as the deer's coming out, and it didn't stop, and so he hits it pretty hard. The deer stops and looks, and it's perfect in the gap, it looks like to me at least. I mean, he's in the gap that I can see. And when you go to shoot this shot, you focus on burning a hole through the animal. So I'm like focused on, I'm thinking heart. That's what I'm shooting at. So I put it where I think his heart is, and it finally locks in, it's not moving, and I pull the trigger, and it looks like it's going great. Mm-hmm. And I think that it hits a limb right before it gets to him. Turns out it was a different limb that it hit.
It hit both of those.
But it hit, yeah, I may have. I know it hit, right? A cedar.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it hit that cedar, but it did. And it helicoptered right underneath him and never hit him or anything, and never got to kill an axis on this trip. So that's kind of the extent of my story.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. But I learned a lot, man. I learned a lot about axis, about their calls, because he bugled when we were in there close. And then, you know, learned a lot about kind of their habits and those kind of things. And mm-hmm. I really am like, this is a thing for me, dude. Like, I'm going to try to find a way every chance I get to go hunt some axis deer and try to call at them and stalk them and do whatever I got to do to finally put something, you know, put an arrow mm-hmm. through one. So,
well, you mentioned that you got a call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Greg. Hey,
Giannis.
Giannis.
He made it to the podcast.
Giannis isn't here to tell his story. So, yeah. You know, without giving too much flair to it, just tell us what's going on over there.
We did two all-day sits, and that was the first time I ever done that. But it's hard to mentally prepare yourself for that because you don't know what time they're going to show up.
Yeah, that's rough.
Like, you're like, you're hoping it happens at 8:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. like normal, but
I feel like axis are kind of like a little more, is it whatever, diurnal?
Diurnal.
They're a little more like that than whitetails.
They're not as crepuscular, you might say. Yeah. I think they do stuff all day, 24-hour period. I also noticed that whitetails, it seems to me, they bed for 3 hours and then get up. Axis is more like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they move around.
Yeah,
a lot.
They do.
They do a lot of stuff during the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, it's hard to mentally prepare yourself when you don't know when they're going to show up. Mm-hmm. And the first all-day sit, we saw axis about 7:45, and we saw them at about 4:30.
You're thinking, oh.
Kind of the normal hunting time.
I could have had a taco.
Yeah. Could have went home.
Mm-hmm.
But the first sit, we had a ton of axis just pour in at, like, 4:30. And Giannis ends up missing high. And it doesn't work out on the first sit, but we end up going back there. And, again, we're waiting, and luckily it happened a lot earlier, the second sit. And
about 1:30, right?
About 1:30.
Yep.
They started pouring in there. I just looked up and just saw giant axes, a line of giant axes bucks, like 40 yards.
You took one bite out of your treat, right?
Yeah, I had a little snack bar, and I just, like, you know, was looking down, and I just took like one bite, and I look up and saw like 30 axes in front of me, and I just dropped it on the ground. Didn't get to finish my snack, but
yeah.
Giannis shot one of the biggest axis deer of all time.
Man, wow. Have we posted the picture of that deer?
Yet? I don't think so.
So,
well, by the time this comes out, we'll post
that's what
something
I was gonna say.
That shows
it's
out.
On the internet.
It is on the internet.
Yep.
You can go find it. It's a big dog, and we'll let Giannis tell that story through the video later. But it's very cool, very interesting.
It is one of the biggest all time killed with archery equipment.
Y'all filmed a video about the special blind that y'all were in. You might be able to see that at some point in time as well. It's a pretty unique little hiding spot.
I think Giannis just posted a necropsy of the.
Oh, I hadn't seen that yet. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Risque, dude.
Yeah, I know, dude. You're trying to get that flag. And then we also recorded a video about our broadhead setups and kind of our arrow setups, which include broadheads, what led us to where we're at between Tyler, Giannis, and I. I'm not sure where that lands. We might release that closer to deer season. We might release it sometime soon. We're just going to leave y'all hanging on that one.
That's going to be a cool video, though.
Yeah. I kind of like it.
Kiddo.
Yeah. I think it'll be good. So that's kind of what we filmed while we were down there. There'll be some hunts from Tyler and I, and I'm going to give you a little bit of some of the exciting stuff that happened to me.
There's already one on
there is.
YouTube.
Y'all should go watch that if you haven't. It's Tyler kind of talking out his process of spot and stalk. And then at the end of it, I take a shot at an axis stow that just doesn't do the thing that they're supposed to do, and that's jump a string. So I missed her low.
I felt like they, for whatever reason, they were a lot less jumpy this go around on string jump than they were in the past that we've hunted them.
It's weird. I think that just every situation is different. You can't just paint a broad stroke.
Yeah,
and I've got some thoughts on that. We might need to do a podcast on string jump and the aiming process sometime soon.
Let's go.
I feel like that's a thing.
If y'all have questions, send them to us on Instagram or whatever.
So whenever I was hunting, our friends down there have a thought about like the way to do things archery wise, and it works, but it's very conservative. I'm never very conservative, right, guys? Y'all know me, but no, I'm
super
kinda,
lib.
Yeah, that's super it. Lib. I'm kind of joking, but I do take a lot of risks in the hunting woods. I chase stuff around, and Tyler's a lot like that too. You know, like we just kind of have a get it done type of mentality, and sitting and waiting on deer that may or may not show up in daylight is kind of tough, but proves to work. So I kind of have two different instances I want to tell you about. They were very vocal in the mornings. Is that what everybody kind of noticed? Some in the evening, but very much more in the mornings, right? That's kind of across the board.
Shut it down about the time they go to bed, I feel like.
And I think that was our buddies think that has a lot to do with the moon. And I could see that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a mooner per se, but
I used to be.
I think I'm a mooner in the sense of like the concept of the brighter at night thing. Like I'm on board with that. I can tell in the elk woods in September. Like, I don't want to hunt during the full moon because they just party all night, sleep all day. And we were there for the full moon during the axis hunt. So we're sitting there in the mornings for a few days, and they're just all over the place. And we're just kind of sitting in a tree, just kind of waiting on them to come by, and it doesn't really ever happen. And we're like, we have got to go chase these things around. So that is the thought. I'm going to leave with a story about that. But before that, sitting water works for axis. We found that out. Like, you had axis close at water. They didn't come drink it. Did you have axis another time?
We had axis come drink water.
That's right. That's right. Last
where
light,
you almost killed.
Mm-hmm. And then y'all killed over water.
Yep.
We had two bulls come in, but they were
too late, right?
Well, no, they're one of them was a real young buck, so he's thin and kind of short, and the other one was a velvet that was about balled up at his caudals. They both drank,
and so there's like a management practice on the place that we're on. It's not just depredation style hunting, you know, like you would be for pigs and other places we hunt. You know, they're trying to shoot mature bucks, so we respected that and didn't shoot anything besides that. And well, I shot at some does, which we had the okay for. Sitting water in the evening works. Sitting water midday works, apparently. Mm-hmm. We were running Moultrie mobile cameras out there some, and that was kind of what we were seeing. They would water some in the morning, some midday, and then almost often in the evenings. And we set water two evenings in a row. Actually, every evening we set water, but we changed positions to a place that you had hunted, stole it from you. Thanks, Austin.
It.
Yep. Wasn't my call.
I told Bryce I wanted to hunt it. And yeah. I don't know. They probably talked and they're like, man, I think KC's going to have a better chance of killing over there.
Yeah. I think what happened was the wind, it was weird because the wind moved around every day, which in our minds as public land hunters, that's awesome because you get to hunt new stuff every day. They were thinking, like, oh, man, all of our setups are for south winds because they hunt them in the summer most of the time. And so, like, the north wind days, they had a difficult time.
Can I butt in?
Yep.
Can you remember what you were saying right there? I think this is one thing that they don't like I said, they don't really bow hunt a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one thing that you and I kind of – I don't know how to say this without sounding pompous. I don't really want to sound that way. But a lot of people think about this way. Here's a feeder, and we got a south wind. So let's put our blind on the north side, right? Mm-hmm. And the way you and I think about things, and I think it's, I'm not saying it's just, it comes from experience, uh-huh. because we've had to kill public land whitetails that have been really tough to kill over years. And we've been able to do that a few times. And I think that what we tend to gravitate more to is how can we back off of that thing just a touch? Because a lot of times, even if you're on the north side of that thing mm-hmm. on a south wind, they're going to come around and wind you, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're sitting 30 yards from the pond or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we end up, a lot of times in these areas, we'll hunt like a crosswind on a trail leading to an ag food source or to a pond or something like that, or even just hunting off of that pond or whatever it is, you know, 100 yards, so that when the deer circles downwind, it comes in front of you mm-hmm. and doesn't ever get your wind. And so I think like a couple of times there were times that I think you and I were thinking that something would work that they probably weren't perceiving as being something that would work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. And that's them being conservative-minded and understanding, like, how it usually goes with clients and yeah. all that, right?
So, I'm not trying to say, because these dudes are bad to the bone.
We all work together to kind of figure out how
Bryce
to
Bryce is a straight-up Indian. I'm not lying to you. He could spot ridiculous small amounts of tines in the shade mm-hmm. at 100 yards while walking across limestone rocks and making no noise.
Hey, they were real good at that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but like they were real good at walking through that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we hunted water every evening, but two really successful evenings. The first time we went in and hunted water, we had a group of does come out very early, like 4:15. And they came out, ran about near to the water, got to the edge, and it just so happens that water isn't just for deer. A lot of things drink water, including squirrels.
Livestock, too.
Yeah, livestock. And so we saw this squirrel go down and get a drink about 3:45. He hopped up on this rock, and I told Michael I could smoke him right there quartering away. Mm. But I was just joking. Turns out I should have.
For sure.
I'm not sure of a season, though. So
you'd only have two arrows left at that point, though.
So we didn't think much about it. Well, that doe comes in, and it's super still. And that squirrel goes move around in that tree. She looks up at it and freaks out, and they all run off. Squirrel spooked those does off. I'm like, well, golly, man, that stunk. Well, at least it's kind of early.
Squirrels are a nemesis, man.
They are, man. They are what the kids nowadays would call an op.
An op.
Mm-hmm. Right, Michael?
Opalisa? Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Stands
that
for?
That squirrel in particular is an op.
It's an op for sure. There's a couple ops running around over there.
He needs a broadhead
bag. Opalisa?
Yep. But we still had high hopes, right, because there have been deer coming around. Well, sure enough, still in daylight. Like, sun's still up, probably like 6:25. We have another group come out, and we're like, oh, nice, they're coming back. Well, they brought friends. There was a big toad daddy in this group, a Mondo. And I told Michael, I was like, I'm kind of getting excited.
Yep. He said, I'm kind of getting excited, and I was like, oh.
That kind of freaked
so
him
then,
out.
Then I started getting excited.
We were both excited. And sure enough, they came in to about 50. I'm not trying to force a shot at all because I'm thinking I'm going to get a shot at these deer at the water.
I mean, they're just calm as can be walking into water.
Yeah, it's just like doing the thing. And there's a bunch of them. So you're usually calm when there's a bunch of them. And it was working. There was like a younger buck, a black buck doe, I think. Or maybe that's the next night. I don't remember. But anyways, there's a bunch of deer. And that same stupid doe looks up at the tree where the squirrel is and starts getting weird. And she just stays weird the whole time. And they lock up at 50, and then all of a sudden, one of them just does something, and they all freak out, and they run off and don't come back out.
Yep.
One squirrel messes up.
Once one starts to go a direction, they're kind of like, okay.
Yeah, they're all going to go right? that way. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, like, I could have shot the buck and probably killed him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was very comfortable in there in that situation. And because I wasn't forcing a shot. I didn't have a bow. Like, I wasn't even, like, trying to draw, you know. Mm-hmm. So it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like, thinking, okay, well, next night, we got a great shot. the wind is more deer favorable, but we can still make it work. Sure enough, deer come out much later because they just do different things. And I think it's we only saw does or maybe a small buck or something with them that night. But it was like 15 minutes before you can't shoot anymore. But they start piling out, and they're coming. Like, oh, sick. This is going to be awesome.
There were like 30 of them.
Yeah, they're piling out. We didn't see the back of the group yet. Yeah.
Pow.
And then all of a sudden, Michael goes, they stop, you know, kind of chilling. He goes, there's a donkey. Sure enough, they stall out. And this big old long-legged donkey walks in there and drinks some water. And they start barking at him. And then he like walks up and looks at them. And they bark some more. And he chases all the deer off at last light.
Listen, a lot of people probably don't know that I like to do the fake rage thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was real rage.
Real rage right there. Got that RR going right there. Oh, it's a real rage. And then our hunt slowly came to a close. The last morning, we had an opportunity for it to go home, to go out and just chase him around as much as we could. And like Tyler said, we're trying to figure out how to call these things, right? And so I, being a little bit of a risk taker, I'm like, we're about to leave. I'm about to just give him the kitchen sink.
Well, it's something we've been asking Bryce and Austin about the entire week is like, have you guys ever seen somebody call him?
Mm-hmm.
And we heard him calling all week. So at that point, it was like, throw the kitchen sink at him.
I've elk hunted quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, let's see if they do anything.
It felt like we were elk hunting that
last
night.
Loved it. It was
awesome. It was awesome.
And so we get out early in the morning. We're just covering some ground. We finally hear a buck roar and we start pushing in on him. It seems like we're trying to catch up to him because every time we hear him roar, he's the same distance away. We finally get to where I thought he was the last time we heard him. Couldn't hear anything, so I'm like, I'm going to roar at this thing and just see if they will come to the sound.
That was close.
It was close. Didn't happen. And sure enough, I give him a two-note, and then one little halvesy because I'd heard one do that earlier in the week. And our buddy said that the big bucks will be kind of lazy. And I think that's that sound is that at the end. And I'm not doing it the actual sound because it'll blow out the speakers here. Within 3 seconds, cows start chirping and they run at us from like 80 yards out. They run into 40 and they're just looking for us. And long story short, they spend an hour away from us. There's a giant velvet buck that isn't grown out that I can't shoot. And then I take a shot at a doe that I thought was at 40. She ended up being like 35. Shot was high. And then they still spend like another 45 minutes there. And finally, by the way, there's a giant buck chasing around does in the back after the shot. So I'm thinking like, okay, we're going to get to shoot him. Him and the other bucks chase a doe off, and then the next 30 minutes they finally line out and go. We don't know where the bucks go because all those does left, or the does stayed while the bucks left, and then they finally left, and then we never could catch up with them again. It made me sad.
End of story.
And there's a lot more stuff because we didn't want to tell everything, but that's some of the exciting stuff that we saw. It seems as if we're getting something figured out on these things. Calling is going to work, especially if we're in the rut.
What's your next move with the calls? What are you gonna think about or try or look at or what are you thinking?
I need to figure out how to call in a solo buck because I think there's gonna be during the rut. There's gonna be some solo bucks. I need to figure out that. I also think that rattling and raking. I think raking especially.
Raking.
Is gonna
we
be
had
a thing.
Guy that last morning, like 75 yards back raking a tree, there's a good chance one of those comes.
I could hear the last morning when I was stalking, I could hear that buck rake like three different times.
Yeah. Me and Casey both stood up after that like 80 bajillion doe encounter, and we're like, if we had somebody raking, it's going down.
Because those bucks, they will circle the group.
Yep.
And that one just happened to find a hot doe, and he didn't have to circle anymore. But if he thought there was another hot doe where that raking was going on.
Different story.
Donados, man.
We've been having them for a while.
Yep.
A lot of fun. Ready to do it again. I think it's going to be a stylistic thing. Yep. I mean, it is. I mean, if you're a bow hunter nowadays, you kind of are a stylist, you know, because 100%. We could all kill nice bucks with guns and had the permission to do so. But we chose to bow hunt them because it's a lot of fun. I love the close encounters. And, again, during the rut, it seems as if there's going to be so many bucks roaring that you could just kind of chill out and have one come by. But who doesn't want to see one come in and go, just like 10 yards from you, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it would be sick.
Oh, so, it was sick to hear him at 50 or whatever he was at when he did it.
Dude, we watched it on the video. That audio is crisp.
Yeah, it is.
It's cool.
It's loud.
But anyways, guys, a lot of fun with y'all this week doing that. I can't wait till we get to do it again. Appreciate Giannis coming down. Appreciate our buddies at T.O. showing us the ropes on the axis. And appreciate y'all for listening. Remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.